It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I thought personally if I got it, I'd be fine. Young people and sports people, we think we'd be okay, but the truth is that it can hit any of us hard. Like, I hate not being able to play GA, not go out and socialise with my friends. The sacrifices are the only way, so we really need to help each other along the way.
Behind every case, there's a story. Protect yourself and each other. Be antiviral. Hear more at antiviralireland.com. Supported by the Government of Ireland.
Hi everybody, I'm Chloe Madeley and welcome back to the podcast series 3. For those of you that don't know, this is the podcast where I speak to professional athletes, coaches, physique competitors, and all experts in the field of health and fitness. I'm really excited that you guys are joining me. So without further ado, here we go. Hello everybody and welcome back to the podcast series 3. For series 3, I am bringing back 4 previous guests. So we've got 4 returns on, and one of them will shock a grand total of none of you. James Haskell is a former Wasps, Saints, England and Lions capped rugby player. He's played abroad and at home over the course of an impressive career that spanned just shy of 2 decades. He's my husband and my clever little sausage. Hi, Boo.
Yes, thank you for emasculating me on your podcast again, or the podcast, as I should say.
The podcast, I know. I was going to say, normally when we podcast, it's for couples quarantine, but I personally much prefer talking to you about like all things health and fitness than all things sex and, misogyny.
That's because you're boring.
It's not because I'm boring. It's because this is much more interesting. There's an actual, do you want to tell everyone
diet's
about couples?
Cool, but sex is cooler.
Well, yeah, I think everyone in the history of the world would agree
with that. Well, that's what I mean then. So that's why you should choose the couples quarterly, but also obviously support the podcast because it is a superior product.
It's a very good podcast, my opinion. That's what happens when I get to fully produce the whole thing instead of you. Yeah. People actually get like info. Do you want to tell everybody first a little bit about couples quarantine and the podcast we're doing?
Oh, yeah. So during lockdown, I really enjoyed doing things with my wife, obviously. I really wanted us to do things in terms of broadcast and podcast. I think, we both kind of got our own separate podcasts. I've got the Good, the Bad, the Rugby and What Flank of the Podcast. And I wanted us to do things together. And I came up with Couples Quarantine. You were like, anything to keep you amused and to shut me up. So we set it up and it's gone well. It's sort of started off around couples related stuff, sex, relationships. And we kind of built this following where we're getting kind of 5 emails a day from people.
More than that.
That was a day. I mean, a week, like God knows how many, asking us all sorts of questions around relationships, around sex, dating. And I think we're brutally honest. And I think a lot of people pretend they don't have sex. A lot of people pretend that life isn't how it is. And we're sort of trailblazing, really, in that respect.
We're trailblazers because we say words like pussy
and ass and
anal.
You keep telling everyone that I've slept with 1,000 women, which I keep saying is not
That's
true.
That's not what happened at all. It's actually slightly mortifying. This is why I kind of feel more comfortable in like the podcast is more like my domain.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's only if you care, really. I mean, the only people who seem to care about what the criticism or the sensationalist stuff from Cops Corner is my mother.
Oh, I know, your poor mother.
You know, she's like, you didn't really try and have sex with Chloe while she was cooking hot oil. And I was like, she's actually cooking prawns, mum, not hot oil. But anyway, that's another detail. She's the only person who really concerns herself. But I'm glad that we've actually shedding some light on some certain things. We come from two different life experiences. Mine's very male-orientated, very different perspectives. I tell you how men actually think, not the shit they say to you to just get you into bed. But that's a certain section of society. But
Actually, you know what? Being given that we're on the podcast and that I do have a crux of my talk with James today, which I will get to. But given what you've just said about that men will say anything to women to get them into bed, just before we go into the kind of theme and topic of today's podcast, let me just ask you this. Do men care if a woman is in unbelievable shape or not.
You know firsthand from your reaction your friends have when you're in like mad shape and they go, oh, can't believe you've got
a
six pack.
Hate
you know, and they hate it. I can't tell you a different perspective because the expression another man's meat is another man's poison is so true. For me, somebody in shape is important, but I will sexualize anything. But when I say in shape, what I mean is there are varying degrees of in shape. Like I really fancy you when you're like ripped to bone, but when you are big tits and ass, I'm
like
I'm,
right now.
Yeah, but I'm all about that. Like
I'm like
you're
five
still,
kgs.
Yeah, but you're still muscly. You're not skinny fat, and you're not like
yeah.
melted wheelie bin. You're like you're fit. So but some people like the bigger. You know, I tried the bigger person.
I
said to my mate, listen, this bigger person was interested. You know, wasn't really my vibe. Beautiful face, beautiful woman, but wasn't really my thing.
But we should probably just clarify that because you're an athlete, you've always really been attracted to and really respected women who are athletic as well. But not everyone's like that.
No, but I also don't. Not everyone's like that. And also, one thing we've talked about before on the podcast is that there is no perfect shape. And where people go wrong and what people get really upset about and don't understand is nobody's telling you how to look a certain way. How you want to look is how you want to look. There is no blueprint for a perfect woman.
Yeah.
It's just your frame of reference and what you feel like's attractive. Also, you know, you can't expect in 8 weeks to look like a performance or a bikini model. But equally, you know, you've got to understand that no one should tell you what you look like. And there's no such thing as a fit person because what I view as fit and you view as fit could be extremely different, but they're still fit.
Yes.
They say a lot of cushion for the pushing. You know, lads are obsessed with boobs. I'm not a boob man. Sometimes, you know, you sacrifice.
I feel all men are boob. I feel all women are boob women. We all love
no,
boobs.
No, but what I mean by that is that you sacrifice, like they go, well, yeah, but look at the tits. And they can absolutely be the hugest fun bags you've ever seen.
Fun bags.
But within that, you might, you know, you're then offsetting maybe a soggier midriff because but you're not looking past that because you love a pair of absolute huge wangers. I'd happily roll like a B cup with a six pack as opposed to triple E's but a dar for days.
Yeah, I think me and you are really similar like this. I think I can't remember if a woman is attractive, I really don't care. If you're attractive, you're attractive. And actually, but that's also very subjective. So if I look at a woman and I'm like, holy shit, she is a 10 out of 10. Often you'll look and be like, no, I disagree. And vice versa. Like, but anyway, yeah, you're right. It's very subjective. And I actually know athletes who really want their females to look in shape in an ideal world. And I know athletes who really could not give two fucking shits. And if anything, I even know a couple who are put off by it.
But I would never tell a partner that I want to look a certain way.
No.
I always operate the policy, treat people how you want to be treated and also look at yourself. Like, I respect my body, I look after it. You know, I think if you ballooned to a ridiculous level and I was like, hold on, your diet's gone to shit, you know, we'd have a conversation purely because of your own health and everything else. But I think there's a big difference between aesthetics and sex appeal.
Yeah, great.
Like, I have met some of the fittest people, perceptionally, and they are duller than dishwater. No sex appeal.
Yeah.
But absolutely nothing going on. Then I've seen people that you might not say are traditionally
stunning.
Yeah. But are like
sexy
chemistry.
Hell.
Yeah. Sexy as hell and vibe. I'm very lucky in you. You encompass both of them, which is really nice. You know, you're like, that's why I'm a bit nervous introducing my friends because you're fit, but also you give off that air that, you know, buy me a few drinks and I might roll you home with you.
Well, yeah, if I have a few drinks, I definitely give off that vibe. It's tragic.
And you're very
I don't mean it,
feeding.
Though. This is couples quarantine territory, so let's move on. And yes, I know some of you might have found James's little talk there hilarious and entertaining and very honest. Mm. Some of you will have found it wildly offensive. Welcome to the world of James.
And also, by the way, just to be very clear with people listening, I use words like wangers and melted wheelie bin and stuff like that. Fun bag. I know it's offensive. I know you can't say it. I don't care because what great words they are. And I understand it's misogynist. I understand it's objectification and everything else. But I find it funny. So I apologize. Don't think that we had a lovely lady on called Selma El-Wadani on our couples quarantine.
Yeah, she's
and
nice.
She basically said, just like I've modified my language around homophobic language, you know, oh, that's gay. I've got to stop using words like drilled, did bits, wangers and everything else. I understand that and I'm not trying to perpetuate anything. I do it because it's funny. And instead of going, yeah, she had wonderful breasts, why not say I had huge wangers?
Right, okay. Let's go on to podcast territory. Yeah. So as you know, and hopefully the audience will know by now too, my fourth book, Eating for Results, is coming out on December 31st. And obviously we do the podcast in the build-up to all my book releases. And we talked on our last two podcasts together predominantly about your training and being a sportsman. Obviously we touch a lot on mentality and mental fortitude. But today I really wanted to talk to you more about nutrition and becoming a professional athlete, which, and don't worry, I know you're not a nutritionist, I know you're not a dietitian.
What are you saying?
But you know, you've had a long road of learning about nutrition and what does and doesn't work and kind of where you started and where you are now. So I wanted to start from the beginning. When you and your parents first decided that you were going to make kind of the rugby dream a reality, did they or you immediately start implementing any changes to your diet, your eating habits, or was that something that came later on?
The honest answer is with the nutrition thing, no, nothing changed when I... So my rugby journey is I never wanted to be a rugby player. I never had no desire to be it. I ended up going to a school where my dad went, both schools, you know, I went there when I was... I don't know why the fathers do that.
Rugby.
But we never took me there to play rugby. There was no talk of me being a rugby player. No, there was never that. They always took me to rugby because I don't think my dad even did it that much. I don't know why. He was just probably trying to reinvent
himself. I'm sure your dad played a bit of rugby as a kid.
Not anything worth mentioning. But I never asked my dad any questions, so maybe he played for England. We never know.
James doesn't even know how old his parents are. It's ridiculous.
Bury your head in the sand.
Carry
on.
What happens when you're an athlete? You just don't ask anyone any questions ever.
Right. It's super selfish.
Super self-involved.
So what happened was I then went to Wellington College. Started playing rugby, got put into the back row by a teacher there, and I absolutely loved
it. Why, just because of your size?
Yeah, and I'd always been playing second row, but I wasn't tall enough. He thought about playing a guy called Mr. Welby, actually, and he put me in there, and I loved it, and I thrived. And then as we got through...
Did you? Were you immediately good? Because James always said to me, like, oh, he was never a very good rugby player, especially in the beginning. Maybe he had, like, a few golden moments when he played for England or whatever, but he was never a good rugby player. And I always kind of just took it at face value, like, okay, why would you lie about that? Apart from, you know, obviously he was a great England rugby player, but I was like, okay. And then so many people that I've met since you know, being with you have said, like, oh, I played James at school, or my brother played James at school. He was amazing then. Like, everyone was scared to play him. And I'm like, you're a liar. Apparently you had a rep for being the future of England rugby.
The problem is, you don't have a person like me. No one ever gives you compliments because they think you're so up your own arse. You don't. You think you already know you're the best.
So now in hindsight, were you bloody good right from the off?
No, I wasn't from the off. I got better and better, but I didn't really understand what I was supposed to be doing because a lot of my childhood and everything else, I was just oblivious. Like, now I know. Now you analyse. Now I look at, like, for example, my DJing or speaking or diet or nutrition. You break it out. You look at other people. I spent my entire childhood out on a mountain bike, lighting fires, pretending to be up to play an army. I didn't pay any attention to it. I didn't watch sport. I had no reference points. My parents were
watch rugby?
No, I did. I started at 13.
Right.
My day started and finished with my parents. They were my reference points. I just was just a kid. I had no... You know, kids Good. Now you meet. Now kids you meet now have idols, are like being picked up at five, you know, doing all this stuff. I had none of this going on. So anyway, when I got into rugby, I went and did county stuff, went through this horrific process to get to trial for England under 16s. And I got all the way through the process and nothing changed diet-wise, just eating lots of everything, you know, trying to eat lots of everything. Very skinny, tall, skinny.
Yeah, that, you know, awkward teenager.
Really phase. Awkward, ugly as fuck. Right, and basically went through this process, got to the final trial, didn't get in, fucked up, didn't do the extra training I was supposed to do. It's all in my autobiography, what a flanker, but essentially...
And did you think you were a shoo-in?
No, but when you get to the final trial, you know, you've come from a privileged background, you've had no disappointment in your life, you think...
You assume,
because you've got no reference point. You know, I was heartbroken, that was my first real tragedy. You know, I didn't have any pets, I had pets, but nothing had died, I had no reference points to, like, failure.
Disappointment.
You know, disappointment. Yeah. Like, you know, my parents gave me everything I wanted or tried their hardest to, I didn't really have that struggle. So I didn't get in and I sort of cried like a baby. And I was like, but I knew, and my dad was like, listen, you didn't put the work in. I know you were fucking around. I ended up for one trial having a few beers, like 15, with a mate of mine in a
Who?
A guy called Ed Cooper in car park in Bracknell. We got a six pack of Fosters, had three each, and were fucking almost like paralytic riding around and trying. And then I went to the rugby game the next day. Obviously woke up hungover, feeling terrible. I'm terrible on the piss the next day.
I didn't think of it that way, of risking your life going to work. But seeing my colleagues pass away in our own ICU, it's just heartbreaking. please stick with us for a while and just make our lives a little bit easier, and then we can all be together again.
Behind every case, there's a story. Protect yourself and each other. Be antiviral. Hear more at antiviralireland.com. Supported by the Government of Ireland.
Acast recommends podcasts we love.
I'm Sam Bungie, one of the hosts of West Cork, a story about a community on the far south coast of Ireland that became a kind of paradise for people looking for a fresh start.
And nobody knew their past. You could be who you wanted to be rather than who you really were.
Then one newcomer was murdered and another was suspected of doing it.
I see him in the market, and really, he's always trying to be normal and trying to get people to like him. But we all know, don't we?
Listen to West Cork now on Acast.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts, including the Irish History Podcast, The Two Johnnies, and the one you're listening to right now.
And so anyway, failed this trial. And then basically after that, my dad said, listen, you can see this as a failure, or you can see as an opportunity to come back. You can play rugby for fun, or you can try and get into England under 18. It could be a goal. And there was a family friend called Henry Abramiani, basically. I can never pronounce his name, but again, he's in the autobiography. He was a trainer. He was about 45 at the time. Great shape. Armenian, about 6'5".
He's like a classic Armenian guy.
Yeah, he used to be...
Tall, dark hair, moustache.
Yeah, absolute porno tash.
Yeah.
And he used to be, he used to be a kicker in NFL stuff and everything else like that. He used to play soccer, loved it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that until the other day. And he basically was a friend of the family. He was actually training a mate of mine. And Dad said, listen, I've spoken to so-and-so's dad. He's working with this guy. Do you want to start training with him? So I met Big Henry. He's like, big guy. You know, that's what he used to say. He's kind of got an Armenian with an American accent. He used to work selling stationery, pens and stuff as well. That was his job. But he was in great nick for a 45-year-old guy. You know, and subsequently, I think he's like 50-odd, 60-odd now. Great, great, great shape.
Yeah, he looks amazing.
And I started training with him at Bracknell Leisure Centre Gym, which was a meathead, absolute gear and all gym, you know, string of vests, yeah. Aluminum trousers, Ronnie Coleman videos on repeat.
Why have I never been there?
I mean, I don't know, like Ronnie Coleman set up, you know, those like bottles of protein stuff in
yeah,
the fridge,
course, yeah.
Like liquid
those
caffeine.
Old school, like dark
old
amber,
school, dark
glass
amber
one.
Glass yeah, ones, yeah, yeah, yeah like yeah. Just protein written on them yeah. And shit. Like you drink them, go nuclear. Yeah. And so anyway, he took me down there and I started off trying to lift the bar. Couldn't even do that on a bench press, 20 kilos. And he was like, you know, trying to get me bigger, but I wasn't putting any weight because I was at that age doing
yeah,
so
growing.
Much at school. So I remember him, you know, telling me to eat more at school. And he would, you know, tell me to ask for more food from the dinner ladies and stuff. And they wouldn't give me any. I remember having rows, you know, can I have more stuff? They're like, no, no. And I was like, you're going to throw it away. And obviously, anytime you answer anyone back at school, you're just cheeky. It's yeah. Like, no, I've got a fundamental point. Oh, just you're cheeky. So, you know, you're like,
I have a life goal.
Yeah, yeah. And they wouldn't give you extra food. So what he used to do is bring 3 chickens in. He used to come in and train me 9 till 10. So we would do homework from 7 till 9. Then we'd have an hour before bed. Like, you know, had to be back in your house at 10.
Yeah.
I'd run out the door, run down to the school gym. And by then I started getting addicted to training. Like the first few sessions I found really hard, but I committed to it. My dad was very much like, you need to do it.
People
pushed me.
Often who take to weightlifting find it addictive, and not because they get bigger extra or whatever. There's something about weightlifting that fucking feels fantastic, but mentally and physically.
But bear in mind, like I'd never, you know, I had no reference points to people who trained. My dad used to have an exercise bike, I think, when he was younger in the 80s, and used to train on the bike. But I never had any reference points to that. So Henry would come in and personal train me, and then he would come in and bring 3 chickens from Safeways or Tesco's reduced. You know, they cook in the rotisserie in the evening, and he'd be like, right, you need to start eating this. But his knowledge was great around the weight of trip, but he didn't necessarily know nutrition. He was like, look, we're just not putting any weight, big guy. And then he said, oh, maybe you should get a protein powder. And I remember he brought a tub of this protein powder from a shop. He said, listen, I think you should do a couple of scoops of these shakes of food. Mm-hmm. And I remember some personal trainer in the gym was like, you know, Halleck said, you shouldn't be putting kids on this protein. It was like,
why?
I don't, because they didn't understand, right? And then
kids are fine on protein, just FYI.
I know. And they're like, oh, is it too early?
I just don't want anyone listening to that and being like,
no, people write to me all the time going, my kid's 15, is it all right for him to like take post-up?
I would say it's more important to be out on a high protein diet as a child and a teenager than it will ever be again.
But I said to him, listen, get your nutrition right first.
Yeah.
Get it from actual foods. But then if you're going to try to get into a surplus or top shit up, it's very hard to eat. I mean, I remember asking...
Protein's a hard nutrient to get in there. I mean, 3 chickens is likely going to be too much protein for your body to have anything to do with after the first half a chicken. Half a chicken will say, 50 grams of protein in there. That will spike your muscle protein synthesis, which is what you need to do if you want to A, build, and B, hold on to muscle. It will saturate the muscle, and that's great. Anything beyond that, which, you know, 3 chickens would be, your body has no use for that added protein. So essentially, it's just wasted calories in terms of if you're going to talk about the what your body can do with it. But it's brilliant and absolutely fantastic that he, someone who knew nothing about nutrition, knew enough to be like, you need to be on a high protein diet because you're growing fast. We need to make sure that you're building and gaining muscle because otherwise you're just going to be lanky. And I love that he did that.
But obviously, I would never even be able to finish the chickens. I'd eat one myself and give them to the old senior boys because they used to be quite loose at school because I was obviously that generation probably just before it was like, you know, can't punish them, we're all good if you're all good, no bullying. And I remember one of the guys used to come in with a BB gun, gas BB gun, and be like, run you fuckers, run. And everyone would be like diving and blasting everyone. I'd just give him a chicken and shoot all my mates, not me. So basically I then followed that, and then we started looking at things like creatine, but kids at school think creatine's a steroid. And what happened is I kept pushing it. Then ultimately I came back sort of a year and a half later, something like, I don't know, 4 kilos heavier, ended up getting into England under 18 and captaining it. But even then my diet was still shit.
Wait, stop, hang on. I've been with you for 6 years. I did not know this. You captained England under 18?
Yes, yeah. Because you're busy fucking talking about yourself.
Did you play with any of the boys that are playing now at that time? Or I guess a lot of them would probably be retired at this point.
Myself, Tom Rees, and then 2 years or 3 years before, 4 years before us, were the first academy guys. So myself, George Skivington, is now coach at Gloucester. Tom Rees and a guy called James Wellwood and a few guys were the first academy teams. The first time that a professional team went, right, we've got an academy. I was the first experiment where they had an extra set of players picking them up early. Mm-hmm. Now they've got academies, development, something called EDC or EPD. In England, like all these like wider squads, like satellite squads, where these kids are picked up at like 12 at local level. We didn't have that.
Isn't this how they pick Olympians in China?
Yes.
They go into schools and they find people who are built like a perfect swimmer at the age of 8, and then they're out of school and they're in the Olympic training camp, and that's
But bear in mind, you become a gold medalist in China, you're a millionaire and it's worth.
Oh, really?
Well, I think so.
I don't know.
You're set for life, I think. Because especially in these communist countries, they want to advertise their superiority. So the same Russia, gold medalists, important people, you're advocating.
Shit ton of needles.
You're advocated, isn't it? Yeah, and they're prepared to do anything because they want to show that communism is superior people. Right. And that's same with China. So then I came back and was in better shape and got in. And it was a proof to me that if I worked hard. And basically from Henry, I carried on working with Henry for another year and a half. But within that space, I then got signed up to the WASS Academy. And within that, they started looking at nutrition.
Right.
And started talking about nutrition.
So you get into WASS Academy, and how do they approach nutrition?
Well, again, pretty backward. sponsored by Maxi Muscle.
Oh, this is right. Well, Maxi, fine. I mean, like a protein.
But Maxi Muscle back in the day were unbelievable.
Yeah,
they were the first proper. Them and Metrex were the number one support. Remember Any Given Sunday?
Yeah.
Willie Beam. And
oh my God, we should watch that tonight. Lady.
Cream and. When he's like, the Metrex was like, he said, ooh, Metrex. Like that, they were brilliant, Metrex, but they weren't tested. Maxi Muscle was the first tested sports supplement, and they had everything. They used to have Pro Max, Cyclone, Pro Gain.
Yeah, Cyclone. Yeah. My God, I first met you, you were living off that shit.
They used to have like Viper Turbos, lactic acid, fish oils, black meat, Viper Turbos, keep the wolf from the door. Yeah, and basically, we had Maxi Muscle. So what they did was like, right, they would send this product. So they'd be like, okay, you're taking Pro Max and everything else.
Is it fair to say that at this point, the only real nutritional focus of the trainings that you were seeing and the clubs that you were coming to was just protein?
Yes.
Because I'm not hearing anything else but protein.
Yes. Basically, I started there and now I got to about 19. I signed up. I left Wellington 2003, the year of the World Cup, right? And I'd had a pre-season with Wasps where I'd been away to Poland to this training camp in a place called Spala where they had the first cryotherapy chambers. Mm. They were the only place in the world that had them. I think maybe somewhere in America. And we would do 4 sessions a day plus 2 cryo sessions to extend our training record. You could train beyond your maximum. Even then we had supplements, but the Polish food you had there was like school canteen food and you would just try and pile it on. I obviously, my whole objective was to get bigger. That was all we were trying to do.
So Wasps Academy were just basically saying to you, and I guess the England under-18s,
yeah,
were basically just saying to you, get bigger, especially, is that because you were back row?
Yeah, but also there was nobody gave you any nutritional advice. Yeah. It was like, do the weights, oh, should be doing weights, do training, get bigger. Okay, so, how? So I was training my ass off, not going anywhere.
What about when you went into full Wasps pair? So, same thing?
It was the same thing. Until they basically, Warren Gatland, the coach, locked me and Tom Rees in the gym. And they're like, you two aren't playing rugby for 6 months. We're going to get you big. And we had and there's a guy.
And he was the first person to do this, wasn't he?
Yeah.
In terms of England rugby, yeah. Not England, sorry, Loss. Club rugby.
Yeah, club rugby, yeah.
He was the first person to come in and be like, you're back row, we've got to get you physical yeah. and huge.
He basically, him and Sean Edwards said they wanted the most aggressive defence, they wanted the fittest guys, and they wanted the biggest and most powerful. We just wanted to fill people in.
Yeah.
They were the first people that had a periodised. Training plan. Well, a guy called Craig White, who was a revolutionary fitness trainer who developed periodized training stuff in rugby. So blocks of, you know, three yeah, weeks they're developing this instead of doing
how everything. Funny this was like and, new.
Yeah, and he did this in, so that's 2003 he started, and then basically he had underneath him 10 fitness coaches over the years that have all gone and become head fitness coaches of clubs,
yeah.
unions, stuff in the world. He pioneered all of this. So we went from doing the same weights as backs to backs doing different stuff, to periodized things, to relevant training, to supplementation, to recovery, to weighing in pre and post-match for fluid loss, for...
they stopped you guys weighing in for pre-match because a lot of you started to get all in your head little bitches about
yeah, yeah.
it.
You're like yeah. weighing in, you're like 2 kilos, like I'm not going to be able to run through New Zealand. So they stopped doing that, but a lot of teams didn't. But he was revolutionary, and we could do a whole podcast on that on its own. But they locked me in the gym, get big or die trying. And basically, I was doing 3 hypertrophy sessions a day in terms of different body part stuff, or, you know, alternately. And we were basically just eating whatever we could get our hands on. Taking, you know, they didn't do German volume training. They brought that in later with other people. But it was like, you know, 3 sets.
But that you would have to bring it in later because as somebody who's new to hypertrophy does not need to do that kind of volume.
No.
And but German volume training is an option when you have... pretty much hit the genetic ceiling of how much you're going to lift over
and
time.
Also it's for people, you know, I mean in my book Perfect Fit I put some stuff in there because you can't rely on people to work hard enough. If you see people training in a gym and you put them a plan and they're going like this and they're losing 2 kgs,
yeah.
The concept was if you give them enough reps, even if they don't get the weights right, they're going to fuck themselves enough, so yeah. You sort of overextend them.
But anyone know? listening, I do want to keep this on nutrition, but like that kind of volume, a newbie does not need to be doing that. A newbie could do two sets of 6 reps of every exercise and get huge. Volume is something that should be added progressively over time, and German volume training, like if you're going to do 10 sets of 10, you know, you have to be pretty, what's the word, old hat at training and really trying to push your body to get to kind of stay in a hypertrophy phase. But yeah, oh my God, if they'd done that to you at that, you never would have recovered.
Yeah, I know. So basically we did that. And then what happened is when I started doing stuff with England, Matt Lovell, the nutritionist guy, was attached to doing stuff with Wasps. They got him in. And then he started sitting down and looking at how you were eating and stuff. And that's when we started talking about protein and carbohydrates and fat and some understanding around that and what we're doing. But there was still no talk of calories. I mean, there was. Obviously, I understood I had to eat more than I was burning.
Yeah.
But there was not any quantifiable numbers. You didn't understand what that was. And as a kid and as a young player, that's, oh, if I eat until I can't breathe anymore, that's got to be enough. But sometimes, some days you don't feel like you want to eat more or less. So you don't know.
Yeah.
You had no concept. So I actually, by the time I started I started up to Wasps 103 kg. So when I started with Henry, I must have been around 90.
Mm.
And he got me out to about 100. And then I got to 103 in my first year. And now I'm 120. I mean, I actually got to 128 in lockdown just to see how big I could get. But by the time I finished my career, when I played against Australia, I was 120 kgs.
Well, Eddie liked to keep you on the lower end of a higher weight, but, if that makes sense.
But actually,
so like 120.
But a lot of these coaches had never fucking clue. You know, they would come up to me and fans would be like, oh, you're looking too big. And I'm like, do you know what? I'm lighter than I was. People go, yeah. You played the best rugby I've ever seen you play in Australia. You must have been light then. And I was like, I was 120.
It's so
people
are
like, were you? Were you? And what I used to do is with coaches, if I told them how much I'd weigh, so I said to Graham Rounds, go, how much are you? I'd be like, oh, 120. A week later, I get feedback going, probably too big at the moment. And I was like, No, I was less than I was. So I stopped telling people.
There's a lot of misunderstanding around that. And I've seen it really be prevalent in the rugby world. You know, look at Usain Bolt. Look at the amount of muscle on that man. Who do you think can run faster, him or Mo Farah? How much muscle you have and how much you weigh has fuck all to do with high intensity sprinting. And it's because high intensity sprinting falls under power. And power requires muscle. And you also, just given your position, you have to be bigger. Of course, you still have to be fit, and you know you have to train for endurance and fitness. But my God, like you, I saw you play some of the best rugby you ever played at the biggest you'd ever been. I do love it though, like the amount of people when, because to me, I look at you and you're my gorgeous husband who I absolutely, you know, I'm obsessed with. But you're just you. You're just James. Mm. And when people meet you, and the amount of times, especially young boy, like young men, it's really sweet. Like look at you, and they're like, you're even bigger in real life.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
and then you get
oh.
the pricks who go, oh, you're actually smaller in real life. You're like,
oh, yeah,
I know what you're doing.
You know what they're doing.
Alpha mailing.
Yeah, they're just Donald Trumping you.
Donald Trumping.
Okay, so look, we've just done literally your whole road of nutrition and understanding and alongside training, which is fantastic.
Well, there's actually one chapter that I sort of haven't finished on talking about. So essentially, got to about 24, was working with Matt Lovell, and then basically discovered what proper nutrition was about.
Well, that's what Matt Lovell will do.
And I understood about the different dynamics, you know, why you would supplement, what you needed to do, and started to understand more about calories. And then I started training with a guy called Phil Learning. And I went to Phil, Phil used to get treatment from a physio of mine called Kevin Lidlow. And I said to him, listen, I'm having knee surgery. I need to train with someone to get back fit. I like the coaches at WASP, but I need to try something different. I want to get a different approach. I've tried lots of mad things. What's the story? So I went and saw Phil, and Phil combined nutrition with training for the first time. Mm-hmm. So we were rehabbing my legs to build back my leg strength and trying to get me in the best shape possible. And he put me on a diet. Basically, didn't ask me to track. He knew what was going on, but he essentially put me on a meal plan.
This was before tracking, yeah.
Yeah, it's before tracking.
This
is a meal plan, right? Yeah. So he basically then was like, right, every meal I want you to have 300 grams of a protein source, like you know, like chicken or whatever. 250 grams of a protein source, 300 grams of a carbohydrate source, and 150 grams of a fat.
I've been in hospital three separate times. One was the big 3 week stay in the coma. Number two was the nerve damage diagnosis. Number three was a surprise attack out of nowhere and I couldn't breathe properly. You know, perfectly healthy 17-year-old, no underlying conditions. It's crazy.
Behind every case, there's a story. Protect yourself and each other. Be antiviral. Hear more at antiviralireland.com. Supported by the Government of Ireland.
Was he specific about lean protein or fatty protein, or was he just...
Yeah, I asked him what he basically said chicken, he said white fish, chicken. Red meat, yeah. But basically put those things in together. And he was like, right. I said, well, how many times do you eat a day? He goes, I want you to eat six of those meals a day.
Yeah.
Right? Because bear in mind... And
that is, just so everybody knows, that is knowing full learning as I do, and even pre-tracking, that will have been to keep on top of muscle protein synthesis. So if anyone's listening like, oh, that'll be for metabolism. No, it's not.
And basically what he did was, he then cleared everything out of my diet. So yeah. I used to track everything I ate in terms of telling him I ate. So the problem was is that I started to do that meal, and that's when my parents got involved, where I was still living at home. I came down and my dad was like poaching chicken. My mum was putting salmon poaching chicken, putting salmon. So basically on the way to training, I would eat steak and nuts for breakfast.
Protein and fat.
I would then eat a salmon fillet out of like a...
Why did he use fat as your energy macro pre-training? Do you know why?
I have no idea why he did that.
I reckon that would have been to get your body used to having to run on a different energy system for when your glucose and glycogen stores.
Yes, I mean, because then there's more to it than that.
That's when like sports nutrition gets really interesting, because a lot of sports nutritionists, I don't know if they still do it, but I know they used to, will really play around with fats and carbs as the energy macro, the fuel source, to basically prepare the athlete for kind of whatever will happen during a game. Because you once had a game that lasted over 100 minutes,
yeah,
right?
Well over 100 minutes, yeah. And basically, so what he did is, and we did that, and you know, I would... we cut out milk, cut out dairy, cut out everything. And I was eating this. And it was, I stuck to it, right? And I was weighing all the stuff out. And it basically meant that I was having like a salmon fillet at the petrol pump, filling my car on the way into London, finished my first training session, sitting in the car, eating cold fish, brown rice and broccoli.
I love cold salmon.
No, it wasn't cold salmon. It was cold white fish, right? And it was like, the problem is after doing that 4 months, you're in hell. Like it profoundly affected your the way I relationship with food. To the point where I'm now the slowest eater in the world. If food isn't like super fucking tasty. I mean, bear in mind that you cook me healthy food and make it tasty. There was no creativity in this food. There was no herbs and spices on the chicken. There was nothing, no rubs, no fucking hot sauce. This was just single ingredient foods cooked basically in fucking water.
This is what we would call a bro diet.
It was the most insane bro thing. But fuck me, I was shred city.
Yeah.
I performed really well. And then one thing he did then was that basically 2 days before the game, I didn't change any of my diet building up towards the game. Because when I was younger, the one thing I forgot to say is when I was at school, Friday night before a game, we would have a massive pasta cook up, all the meatheads. And they would put like a bucket of pasta sauce and we'd eat that, thinking that was a good idea. Bear in mind, you're suddenly spiking yourself with a pile of fucking carbs. So before, night before a game, you probably weren't going to sleep that well on it because your body's digesting it all night.
Yeah.
So when I basically then went to with Phil, I said, I'm going to peak for games. He said, no, consistent through the week. On a Friday and Saturday before the game, you're going to cut all the carbs out and you're going to mix a scoop of coconut oil, almond butter, peanut butter, something else, mix it, and you're gonna cover that in all your protein. So I basically ate all my meat and food and vegetables with. So I basically had vegetables, unlimited vegetables, 4 spoonfuls of this mix I made, basically this fatty paste, and had the protein and cut the carbs. And basically, then I would do that to switch energy systems. So basically, when I ran out my glycogen stores, I would then go and be able to utilize fat properly.
I would venture to guess that he would not have you running out for a game without having had any kind of either fast release carbohydrate in your bloodstream and your energy system or stored glycogen muscle.
But I
do understand the theory behind it. And this actually reminds me when I first met you. Every morning you would have eggs and bacon cooked in coconut oil. And I was like, ooh. Like, no, I don't want to eat that. And why the fuck are you eating that? Because you're like the size of a hat and you're like, it's what I do. And I was like, well, who am I? Like, but I remember being like, this makes no sense to me. And now I look back and having spoken to Phil Lunny on the podcast before and knowing him the way that I do and loving him. He's fucking fantastic. He's such a great coach. It makes all the sense in the world to me. But even now I reckon he'd look back and I don't think he would have done it the same way.
I then ended up eating the, I think I probably did have carbs on the game day, eat and then, you know, have a pizza or something in the evening and go straight back into it.
Imagine that the night before you probably would have had some slower release carbs that would have stored. And I reckon the morning of you probably would have had some fast release carbs that you could have burnt off. And then he basically will have, if he'd done that, and I can imagine that's probably what you would have done, you would have had immediate energy, you would have had stored energy, and your body would be able to switch energy systems when it needed to.
Yeah, that's probably what he did.
For the time, this, how old
must have been, I was 27, 28.
Yeah, so that's really advanced. But that's Phil Lunny.
But he did that. But also, he was the first one to notice your posterior chain was weak, focused so much on my glutes and hamstrings. He was the first one that introduced those slow-release carbs in shakes. You know, the thick, basically, there was something he gave me that was like, that I bought, that was like liquid bogey. It was like...
You can pronounce it,
but I quite liked it, actually, but it was like goo. It was like drinking gloop with your protein shake. I used to have that. And then basically, I then finished with Phil because I left and went to Japan and New Zealand. Then I came back. I then started again. Basically, when I met you was when I the first time I'd ever started tracking my food. And you got me into tracking and understanding. Then I went up another level in terms of my understanding of nutrition and realized that I'd been underfueling myself in the mornings before sessions. My mate Travis, who at the time was like, you're not eating enough, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. And I basically... And I'd fallen into the trap of trying to worry about the cover model body, not fueling enough, not fueling performance, not fueling training. And you were the first person that I actually taught me about like tracking. And were like, you know, if I eat 4,500 calories, I'm going to gain weight. If I sit here, I'm not going to gain weight. If I want to lean up, I do this. If I don't want to do this, I do this. And when I started tracking my food, I was blown away about how little protein I was having, how high my saturated fats were. in comparison to stuff, how I was underfueling everything. And that completely changed everything I did. And then Travis changed the way I did trained and did everything around my training. And now I am where I am, where I can basically change whatever I want to do and I can get bigger, leaner, smaller.
But that's it. So you only know what calories are your maintenance, what calories are your surplus, what calories are your deficit when you have data. When you it's only ever stab in the dark. I don't care if you're doing the Harris-Benedict formula, if you're doing the Mueller equation, if you're doing a 2-1-1 macro split, which is my personal favorite, but taught to me by the amazing Matt Lovell. It is all a stab in the dark. It is all guesswork. And you have no fucking idea what numbers your body will respond on until you start tracking and you get some data. Once you do that, then you can create a really effective meal plan, because there's nothing wrong with meal plans and they get such a bad rap. But the problem with meal plans is that they don't take the subjectivity into account. And I remember when I started getting you to track, and after a few months, you were like, oh, I'm looking bigger, I'm gaining weight. And that was the goal. And you were like, well, why, maybe I should go back to doing what I was doing before. Like, I like how I look there. And I'm like, yeah. If you were in a deficit all that time, you will have been underperforming and your body would have, and well, I was you would have been under-recovered.
I was overtraining and not having good nutrition.
Yeah, and you, and I remember you being really under-recovered. Like, I remember how you were after games. And you got better. It got better. As soon as you basically started eating enough and fueling your body properly, it got better. And I and you're completely right. When it comes to being an athlete, you have to park your physique at the door and focus on your performance and your recovery, because that's where, and the physique should be a byproduct of that. It shouldn't be the main goal. So when you look back now, in terms of everybody you played for, both, you know, club and country, which club was the most advanced in terms of nutrition and which was the most shockingly behind? I know you're going to say Stade Français, aren't you?
WAS was the most advanced. I would say Stade Français was great. Amazing food, just no, like a complete lack of understanding. I mean, it was interesting that, you know, before home games, they would make us stay in a hotel in Paris, even though we all lived in Paris, because they couldn't trust the Argentinians and the French to eat properly. And that, you know, and you'd be like, what do you mean?
Argentinian food is the bomb.
I know, but it's like they would sleep in or get on the coffee or smoke a load and just not eat anything. And you were like, oh. And I said, I'm professional. I used to turn up with my own sort of Tupperware. And they used to call me La Machine because they were like, always more, La Machine. I was like,
I thought they used to call you La Roast Beef.
Yeah, of course, they call me that as well.
Did you take a different nutritional approach when you started training for MMA? And do you want to just give everybody like an update on where you are?
Yeah. I mean, the MMA thing's interesting. Obviously, I prepared for my first fight, was ready to go. I tore my pec, but I was ready to fight, and that got canned. And they're still talking about fighting empty arenas. They're still talking
not
about this
for you,
kind of stuff.
You're a,
and I'm like, you know, I just don't know what I'm going to do about it, to be honest with you. I've had a few issues with my body. I had to have an injection in my spine. I've got 3 bulging discs that I needed to sort out. And to be honest with you, I haven't earned any money for a period of time. And actually, you only get paid when you fight. And, you know, it's a massive commitment to do it properly, which I was doing it properly. It was 6 days a week, 6 months. You know, I was so fucked at the end of these training sessions after sparring 3 days a week in the cage, wrestling, that I, you know, it was difficult to do anything else that I needed to do.
And I have to admit, like when the whole COVID thing hit and they started talking about empty arenas and I could see that you were super put off by that, I was quite relieved.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see what happens. Like, you know, I'm still contracted. I can still, you know, I'm just waiting to see what happens with all this stuff. But the nutrition stuff was interesting. I was burning through so many calories. And what you've got to remember is I had the ultimate detox of all detoxes doing I'm a Celebrity. I was eating for 18 days rice and beans the entire time, cooked in some vegetable oil. And then you would maybe, if you've got some decent stars, you know, win crocodile feet or a kangaroo's tail or a, you know, or an eel full of bones. It was the ultimate detox. My skin cleared up. You know, I got folliculitis. That completely disappeared because I wasn't having any milk, any sugars, anything processed, anything refined. Yeah. It was the ultimate detox. And I came out of it. I went in 122 kgs. I came out of 110. I almost had panic attacks over lack of food. I was starved.
You did have
panic. I was like, well.
Some of the stories that people don't hear that happen behind the scenes of that program is it's no joke the way they starve you.
And basically, so I had that. So I came out and then started MMA training essentially after that. And I couldn't put any weight on. I wore my Apple Watch and a heart rate monitor, right, and calories. And in 45 minutes of stand-up work, pads, I burnt 1,500 calories.
Yeah.
Right, 45 minutes. And then I did an hour and a half wrestling session with 5 5-minute rounds. So I reckon I was burning about 2,500 calories per 2-hour training session, maybe more. you could, obviously you train, you can only eat a certain amount before.
Yeah.
4 hours in the car, 2 hours there, 2 hours and back up here. I was fucked. I tried to track, but we had to put my calories up to 5,500 yeah. calories. And I was just eating and eating and eating. And it was only when lockdown came the first time did I actually reset and start going back to some normality. Did I start feeling normal again?
I remember like halfway through the first lockdown, you obviously, it was really interesting because James is somebody who's really, really proactive, both in terms of mentality and physicality. And he always has been. He's not somebody who can easily sit still, and he's not somebody who doesn't do much in the day. That's just not him. Like, it actually makes me feel sick and tired if I spend more than 2 days like literally by his side because it's too much for me. And I remember halfway through that lockdown, you had been pretty sedentary for the whole thing. Like, you were going in the gym maybe 2-3 times a week to stay on top of fitness. Other than that, you were sedentary. You were on your ass, you're playing. And I was like, how funny. Like, I felt like your body was pushing you to sit the fuck down and recover. And all of a sudden, you went from being kind of gray and yeah. And I'm sorry, but looking very beat, like your body looked beaten up. And all of a sudden, you started to look big again. And you started to, your color all over your body, all over your skin started to come back. And I remember looking at you and being like, oh, you look healthy again.
Yeah.
And that whole time you were fighting, you did not look or even seem healthy.
They found religion in the fight camp.
Yeah.
One of the guys was like, he goes, mate, it doesn't get better ever. And he said, I was so fucked up, I went and found God one time. I mean, he pretty found out of God after it, but, you know, anything to try to get him through this, the hell, you yeah. know, because these guys are ultimate athletes. So I tweaked it. But again, what I've always done as well, seeing Matt Lovell, is I get my bloods done. And I've yes. worked with a guy called Wade Akhtar as well, who is brilliant in terms of stuff around peptides and healing and other things and recovery. And I got my bloods done and they were like, you know, your vitamin D is down the toilet. What are you thinking, James? Simple. You know, your fish oils, you know, are down. You know, you're showing every sign of overtraining. Like my creatine kinase level, which is basically tissue breakdown in the blood, was the same on a day off as if I played 2 back-to-back test matches against South Africa. You know, he was like, mate, you are showing all the signs of overtraining.
Yeah.
I couldn't sleep, couldn't think. If I did it again, I mean, I don't, I would, I would talk to
him. I personally, and I know people will hate me for saying this, I'm not Lady Macbeth. I promise I'm not. But I personally don't want you to do it again. Just quickly to intercept on that vitamin D point, I'm a really big believer that everybody, no matter who you are, should be taking vitamin D, fish oil, magnesium supplements. So that actually brings me nicely onto my last question for you. In terms of anybody out there who wants to become a professional athlete or even a physique athlete, what nutrition and or supplementation advice would you give them in terms of what to know going forward?
I mean, look, firstly, you've got to understand what your goals are. Everything related around training and nutrition is goal related. You know, you can't be bigger, stronger, leaner, faster, you know, more muscular. You know, you need to choose what you're going to do and stick to that and give it a period of time to fix it. You know, you understand that what is your sport about? You know, rugby was a performance-based goal. So everything about my nutrition has to be around performance-related stuff. Mm-hmm. That is fueling your body, that is recovering your body. And aesthetically, you know, yes, you want to be in good shape, but by a byproduct of eating well, training well, doing the prescribed weights, etc., you should be like that. There's no excuse to be a fat athlete unless you're like a super power lifter, because mass, you know, mass moves mass.
Or a sumo wrestler.
So I would look into that. I would firstly start to cut all the fads and shit out of your life. Put down a copy of Men's Health magazine. Stop worrying about fasting. Stop worrying about all this stuff. Get a basic understanding of what protein, carbohydrates and fats do. Understand that protein, fiber, fats are essential. Carbohydrates, you know, aren't even an essential macronutrient.
Yeah.
But
if you're a performance athlete, they pretty much are.
Yeah, and that you need to understand that, you know, what that looks like. I would then, you know, take some time to maybe start tracking, get an idea of your diet, get some data, get your bloods done. There's no point supplementing all this stuff if you don't need it. Yeah. For example, you know, old goody two shoes over here, Matt Lovell, we did a blood panel on both of us. She scored like perfect. He was like, I've never seen perfect fish oil balance, you know.
I pretty omega. Much, other than my genetically high cholesterol, which I can't really do that much about, I pretty much got an A star.
You did get an A star, whereas I showed
manganese. He was like, drink more red wine. James was like, no. I was like, yeah.
I was like, my copper was down. It's like, how, you know, eating, you know, you need to eat more shellfish, like clams. You know, obviously I had to supplement it, because I'm not eating a lot of clams around here at the moment.
You did in the summer. You were good. Yeah, yeah. When they lifted lockdown for a short period of time, And we decided to like go everywhere. You ordered clams every day. It was great.
You know, and so I, and then I'd understood what I need to do. Then you can see your blood levels. You know, there's no point. You know, it's interesting. There's no point having a high testosterone level if your sex binding hormone is blocking it, or you're not getting any benefit from it. You need to understand how to unlock that. And you know, if you think you're eating enough, like I meet players all the time and go, yeah, but I mean, I'm doing all this stuff and I can't grow. And you're like, what are you eating? Like 2 meals a day. And then you track those meals and they're eating 1800 calories. It's like you burnt 3000 fucking calories in this meeting alone. Do you know what I mean?
An easy way to get your calories up would be have a Domino's pizza every day. But the downside of that is you're likely to hit your calories but not be nutritionally well balanced.
Yeah, that's why when people talk about calories and just calories only, what they forget is it's not all calories are equal.
Yes.
And, you know, in terms of the micronutrients.
And a lot of people will argue that and be like, a calorie is a calorie is a calorie.
No, it's not.
It's like a calorie is a unit of energy, and I understand that. It's a unit of heat. A calorie
from an Oreo
is very different from a calorie from a piece of green chicken breast
or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, it's just not the same thing. But,
I would get that knowledge. I would also then look at a plan and find someone that you respect that knows what they're talking about. So don't go to a bodybuilder for a performance plan. Equally, don't go from a marathon runner for ideas on how to bulk up. It's not going to do that. So find people that you respect. Look into it. Take your time. Focus on one goal and understand what that is. And remember that decent diet affects sleep, mood, sexual health, performance, skin, thinking ability, concentration, personality, everything. If you get that right, you can genuinely change your life.
Yeah, I love that. And just having spoken a little bit about supplements, be very, vitamin D, fish oil, magnesium, those are the three that I really push on clients. Be very careful to start going like really kind of specific and left of field with your supplementation, because your whole body is like a chain effect. It's like a domino effect. And if you start pushing one thing without pushing something else, you can find that actually it's suboptimal in terms of your nutritional and hormonal health. But James, that was fantastic. And I love that we literally did a whole hour talking about nutrition, which we've never done before. Mm. I love you. Thank you for coming on.
That's right.
I'm sorry that this time I can't take you for dinner to say thank you.
You cooked me breakfast just now.
Yes.
That's fine.
I'll cook you lunch as well.
Oh, you're such a kind lady.
So yeah, thank you guys so much. And tune in next week for another episode of the podcast with another fantastic guest. Bye, guys. That does it for today's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please remember to hit that subscribe button or that follow link so that you can be notified as soon as new episodes are released. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at MadelyChloe for more health and fitness posts.
Sports Social Podcast Network.